to Woke History. I'm your host, Dr. Joshua K. Wright. I'm a college professor in Washington, D.C. Woke History is a new podcast series that features lively conversations with guests focusing on historical and contemporary issues of race, gender, political activism, and culture that are often ignored in most high school classrooms and social studies textbooks. Guests will include a wide range of individuals, from scholars and community activists to professional athletes, media personalities, and others. Today's guest is Dr. Crystal Moore Clemens. Dr. Clemens is a former professor at Virginia State University, and she is the newly appointed National Director of the Children's Defense Fund Freedom Schools. The Children's Defense Fund, or CDF, was founded in 1973 by Dr. Marion Wright Edelman. Dr. Edelman graduated from Spelman College and Yale Law School and then became the first black woman admitted to the Mississippi Bar. She directed the NAACP's Legal Defense Fund and Educational Fund Office in Jackson, Mississippi in the mid-60s before moving to Washington, D.C. in 1968 to serve as counsel for the Poor People's Campaign that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. began organizing before his death. Under Dr. Edelman's leadership, CDF has become the nation's strongest voice for children and families. The Children's Defense Fund's Leave No Child Behind mission is to ensure every child a healthy start, a head start, a fair start, a safe start, and a moral start in life and successful passage to adulthood with the help of caring families and communities. One of the highlights of CDF is the establishment of Freedom Schools. Before my guest, Dr. Clemens, joins me for our conversation, I'm going to play excerpts of a 2014 interview Marion Wright Edelman conducted with the late Gwen Ifill for the PBS NewsHour. In the interview, they talk about CDF and the historical legacy of the Freedom Schools.
Marion Wright Edelman was a young lawyer when she headed south half a century ago, determined to change the world.
Were you breeding young activists?
Absolutely. And this, when you begin to teach people about the importance of reading, and Frederick Douglass talked about the importance of literacy to anything. Once you know how to read, it's very hard to make you a slave. And secondly, once you learn about your history and learn to question rather than just to accept, you create a new child.
Charles Cobb, then a member of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, or SNCC, had the same thing in mind.
We were going to have upwards of 1,000 young people from the North, mostly white, coming to the state of Mississippi. So we were also faced with the question of, what are you going to do with them?
What they did in the face of threats and violence was create a network of alternative schools, sending the college-age volunteers to teach young people about the value of their own history.
Yes, I want to register to vote. Yes, I want a decent school. Yes, I want to be able to get a Coke if it's a hot day and there's somebody selling Coke in a restaurant. I think it's hard for people to get their heads around that. And the Freedom Schools, in part, were designed to teach young people that they didn't have to accept it.
Edelman, now president of the Children's Defense Fund, never forgot about the 40 Freedom Schools created that long, hot summer. They ultimately served about 2,500 students, including some adults. Flash forward to this year, 50 years later, where for 6 weeks, nearly 13,000 students in 29 states and more than 100 cities have begun each day this way. Harambe, a Swahili word meaning let's pull together. Washington, D.C.'s Malcolm X Elementary is one of nearly 200 Freedom Schools operating this summer in low-income neighborhoods, homeless shelters, juvenile detention centers, and even college campuses. Through field trips, classroom reading, and even singing and dancing, the children are learning more about themselves and about American history. Freedom School teacher Jennifer Snodgrass says the lessons fill in gaps often left unaddressed in traditional classrooms.
In it's very much setting the foundation for as they get older, they'll have prior knowledge that they can draw from to help build those facts and their own opinions and thoughts about the civil rights movement.
10-year-old Sydney Dunbar has recently been introduced to the stories of Martin Luther King Jr. and Nelson Mandela.
I learned that all the sacrifices that people had to go through just to be free.
And 8-year-old Anai Holly has been learning about slavery and segregation.
I actually feel upset because it doesn't actually matter about your skin color. It matters about how you are on the inside, not on the outside.
For Charles Cobb, this echoes the effort he launched in Mississippi 50 years ago to address educational inequality.
We used to call it sharecropper education, designed to do nothing more than to keep blacks available as sharecroppers.
But it's not all about the past. It's also about the limitations of the present. Abenbola George is the project director at the Malcolm X Freedom School.
Sometimes when we do home visits, I see no furniture in the living room. Sometimes, you know, I see no door handles and locks. You know, it's really hard to see because you realize that if it wasn't for Freedom School, some of these children won't have breakfast or lunch.
Researchers from the University of North Carolina, who studied 19 Freedom Schools in Charlotte last year, found 90% of the students had no summer learning loss in reading. For 2/3 of the students, their reading skills improved. But Edelman wants to build on that preliminary success.
50 years later, why is there still a need for Freedom Schools?
Because we still have an inferior education system for millions of children of color, and particularly if they're poor. Mississippi today, 90% of the children cannot read a computer at grade level in 4th or 8th grade and do math at grade level in 4th or 8th grade. The prisons are teeming, the youth prisons and the adult prisons are teeming with black young men, and the average literacy level of those in those prisons is about a 5th grade. What are you going to do in this economy with a 5th grade literacy level?
How were slaves first introduced in America?
The Children's Defense Fund is planning to honor the legacy of those first freedom schools next summer by expanding to historically black college campuses and to one of the original sites in Mississippi.
So joining me now is Dr. Crystal Moore Clemens, the newly appointed National Director of the Children's Defense Fund Freedom Schools. So first, congratulations on your new appointment, Dr. Clemens.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Joshua.
How did you get involved in the Freedom Schools?
Well, this has been a 20-year journey for me. I was a servant leader intern for the Children's Defense Fund Freedom Schools, which is basically one of their college-age teachers. And I taught in a freedom school on the south side of Chicago while I was an undergrad at DePaul University. It was at the Carter Temple CME Church, One Church, One School Freedom School. And I was kind of bit by the freedom school bug at that moment.
Interesting. Did you always foresee yourself in a position with national reach and impact like you have now?
Well, you know, the last, 10 to 15 years, I've been in higher education. But within higher education, I have been working with Freedom Schools. So whether it would be in a project director role, a site coordinator role, or an executive director role, I've had the opportunity to still be connected to Children's Defense Fund Freedom Schools. So when the opportunity presented itself to become the national director, I welcomed it. Because I have such love and admiration for this organization and for the Freedom Schools program. Now, did I ever see myself doing this in college? No, but I didn't. You just don't know kind of where your career will take you and what moves you'll make to do the work that moves you.
Yeah, so let's go back just a little bit. I know you said you started out with the Freedom Schools when you were a student in Chicago. Describe that experience to me.
It was life-changing, Josh. It was more transformative than I thought it was going to be. So I signed up for an internship. I thought, oh, this would be great. I will teach some kids at this church, and it's connected to the civil rights movement. This will be a great summer. What I did not know was that they were going to send me to Alex Haley Farm in Clinton, Tennessee, and that I would be in this incredible professional development training ground for young leaders, you know, up and coming leaders. And so when my first summer at Haley Farm, when I was training to become a servant leader intern, we had, you know, prolific guest speakers, you know, Alice Walker, Yanita Blackwell, Reverend Joan Parrott, Dr. Greg Carr. And I'll never forget, he had a lecture talking about speaking to the after, and what is your work going to do in order to speak to the after. And so I think it was at that moment that I was just so moved by it that I thought, wow, this is more than just a little internship. This is a movement. And I didn't really, we knew about Black history growing up with my grandparents and, you know, my parents. But to see in person someone like Yanita Blackwell or someone like Alice Walker, like standing before you and actually talking to you about what it was like to do movement work, it was really transformative for me. And so that's when I really got, you know, all in.
How old were you at the time?
Well, let's see, I was a junior, so 20, 21.
Okay. And you're a native of Chicago?
Native of Chicago, and I'm from the north side, so I didn't spend too much time out south, but I just didn't know anything like this had even existed in the city as a possible job opportunity.
Did you grow up wanting to have a career in education?
No, originally I wanted to serve as a lawyer, and I wanted to do, you know, kind of policy work and more like kind of advocacy work from the legal perspective. I was a women's studies major in college, and I was political science in college. But after my first summer at Haley Farm, I actually pivoted and decided to go into history and education. So that's kind of how I did the master's and the doctorate in history and education, because it was just really life-changing for me to learn all about, you know, Freedom Summer, civil rights movement. I just hadn't experienced that.
Right. And then you ended up doing graduate school at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, correct?
Yeah, I did my PhD at UNC Chapel Hill, and my master's is actually from Washington State University.
Oh, okay.
And I did a master's in American studies with a concentration in history and Black studies.
Okay.
And then I did a graduate certificate in women's studies at Duke while I was at Carolina, just to kind of round out my research interests.
Okay. Wow. So I know you talked about some of the amazing people you came into contact with, such as Alice Walker, Yanita Blackwell. You mentioned Dr. Carr, who was one of my former professors when I was at Howard.
Yeah.
But working at with the Freedom Schools, you also come into contact with, I'm sure you work with Marion Wright Edelman, you know, in the past, right? So what was that experience like for you, being with someone who was right there with Dr. King and Bobby Kennedy and Hillary Clinton and all these great people in the past?
Oh, it was a dream. It was just a dream, because you read about her work and then her, you know, her accolades, right? So being the first Black woman to pass the Mississippi State Bar and, you know, graduating from Yale and, you know, really pushing people at that time to think about children and poverty. You know, she is just an incredible woman. And it was just life-changing to see and witness her firsthand. And she's so highly revered in terms of, you know, what she has contributed to the movement. So to see everyone at Haley Farm with open arms come out to extend, you know, their well wishes and learn and teach us, that was really powerful. Because these weren't just people she invited. These were people she knew that she actually did the movement work with in the 60s. So it was amazing.
So in the PBS video, actually, before I get to that question, let me ask you this one. On your webpage, it says Freedom School students engage in a research-based multicultural integrated reading curriculum that supports them and their families through five essential components.
Okay.
What are those components?
So the five essential components really is how we developed our curriculum. So the first one is high quality academic enrichment, parent and family development, civic engagement and social action, intergenerational servant leadership development, and lastly, nutrition, health, and mental health. And essentially, the Freedom Schools is built upon, of course, the original Mississippi Freedom Summer Project of 64, which basically was an opportunity for, you know, college-age folks coming from various parts of the country to come down to the South in Mississippi to mobilize young people, okay? It was also to supplement what children were not getting during their academic school year, because at that time, you know, we had sharecropping education, so students didn't get to go to school all throughout the full academic year. And then it was also about helping students develop the capacity to make a demand so that they knew, okay, here's what the Constitution says, here are my rights, and this is how I can mobilize to support myself and to support my family. And so knowing that history, when they began 25 years ago to reimagine a contemporary iteration of Children's Defense Fund Freedom Schools, they did that with those five essential components in mind, and then also that history in mind. And so our curriculum has six components. I can and must make a difference in myself, family, community, country, and world, with hope, education, and action. And so the weekly activities build upon those weekly themes, and then those five essential components are what guides those weekly themes, right? So we're going to have, you know, great discussion questions within our lesson plans. We're going to have weekly parent meetings so that we keep our families engaged. For the national engagement and social action piece, we have our National Day of Social Action, where we have a theme. We engage our students on what they think they need to do to be politically and civically active. And then the intergenerational servant leadership piece is, it's fully staffed by college age or recent graduates, interns. And so it's not just me from Chicago, but it's, you know, so-and-so from California, another student from Texas, and we're all coming from across the country to receive this curriculum training to do this good work within our respective local communities. And then finally, we require that our sites provide at least two healthy meals a day. So we eat breakfast with our scholars, and we also eat lunch with our scholars. And we do that so that we can, you know, break bread with our young people and to have conversations and to make sure that they're getting what they need, right, from a nutrition standpoint. But we also do that to make sure they're getting what they need from a communal standpoint, too. So how's your day going? How are you doing today? That kind of thing that we have. We foster, you know, positive critical dialogue around these meals.
And is that kind of where the mental health component comes in? Because you're trying to find out how they're actually doing and what's going on with them.
Absolutely. And we work with various mental health professionals within our respective communities to provide services and supports to our children.
Yeah, that's so important. What are the demographics of a lot of the kids and the families, the socio-demographics of the kids and the families that are involved in the program?
So it varies by region. So if you are you know, on the West Coast, for example, you're going to see a Freedom School that is made up of, you know, African-American, Latinx communities, right? If you are in the middle of America, you know, we have some Freedom School sites that are actually located on Native American reservations or indigenous communities. So you're going to see that. If you're in the heart of the South, you're going to see a blend of, you know, African-American students and, you know, rural white children as well participating in our program. So it really depends on the region in which you are looking at. We've had some wonderful Spanish-speaking sites, right, where they have multilingual programs in the East Coast, okay? So it all depends on where you are in the country.
And the program is only during the summertime, correct?
Correct, yes. We six weeks in Richmond.
Six weeks, okay. The college students who end up volunteering and working with the program, I'm assuming that they come from those same diverse communities and backgrounds as the students?
Absolutely, yeah. We encourage our sponsoring organizations to hire from within. So the last couple Freedom Schools that I've had the privilege of working at have been at institutions of higher education. So I worked at the Durham Freedom School, which was housed at North Carolina Central, and then I also worked at the North Florida Freedom School in Tallahassee, Florida. And so it was a partnership between the HBCUs in the local area. And so we were able to recruit from within across all different disciplines, all different majors, students who were interested in this summer internship opportunity.
Interesting. So the students, I'm assuming, they go home, right, at the end of the day, the little kids?
Yeah, it's not an overnight program, yeah.
Okay. What's the success rate of the kids who end up, you know, completing the program? Like, what happens next for them?
So we have some great evaluation instruments. Remember, Freedom School is about instilling the love of reading for our children, and then it's also to supplement maybe what they're not getting in their traditional public school setting. And because our curriculum is multicultural and culturally responsive, we typically highlight stories of children or adults or authors from diverse backgrounds. So you're going to read a book about Hidden Figures, or you're going to read a book about Ella Baker, for example, because we're trying to make sure that our young people understand the fullness and the richness of our history. So just with our data report from 2019, we found that 84% of our scholars avoided summer learning loss, which was really powerful for us. We also saw that 90% of the parents saw an increase in their child's reading confidence level. And then we also saw an increase, because part of our commitment is to increasing parent involvement, and we saw a 90% of our parents were interested in engaging more in social action with their children.
Dr. Clements, let me ask you this. In regards to that parent engagement, what are you all doing specifically to get them involved during that 6 weeks?
So it all depends on your site. So some of our Freedom Schools around the country, they have what you call a parent university. Mm-hmm. I know for our sites, whether it be at Virginia State University, North Florida Freedom Schools, or Durham Freedom Schools, we had a parent ambassador that we worked with. And so that parent ambassador was charged with keeping up with all the different parents and guardians and developing the agenda for the parent meetings. Freedom Schools, we require that you have a weekly parent meeting. So you're at least connecting with a family member one time per week or five times throughout the summer.
Children's Defense Fund recently appointed a new CEO. Right, and I know you were pretty excited about that. Who is that new CEO, and how do you foresee him helping to, you know, further the cause of Freedom Schools?
So we have just named Reverend Dr. Starsky Wilson as our new president and CEO. And we are just so excited and so invigorated by this. I mean, Dr. Wilson is a national thought leader in racial justice, community organizing, and movement building. He's a true champion for children's rights, and he has had a long-standing relationship with the Children's Defense Fund, particularly the Children's Defense Fund Freedom Schools. He's an executive director from St. Louis. And so he ran his own site, and he knows what it takes in terms of, you know, supporting children's literacy and empowerment through CDF Freedom Schools. And then he's also an incredible preacher. I mean, he has preached at the Children's Defense Fund Proctor Institute for Child Advocacy Ministry. And so he's just a forward-thinking guy. He's also, you know, Mrs. Edelman, she noted he is the right leader at the right time. And so for us to have her blessing in working with Dr. Starsky Wilson is just wonderful, because I think he is truly the person to pick up the torch and carry the torch forward.
Interesting. So I don't forget this later. If parents want to get involved and send their kids to Freedom Schools, or if college students like the people I teach want to do this, is there a website? Like, who do they contact in order to get involved?
So you can log on to childrensdefense.org, and when you get to the programs tab, you just click on CDF Freedom Schools, and everything you need to know, whether it's related to understanding more about the integrated reading curriculum, you want to know more about our facts in terms of how many scholars we've served, how many program staff members we've trained. There's also some great videos on there just to talk about the history of the movement. And then you'll learn information about how to sponsor an organization, or how to serve in the servant leader role, or how to enroll a child in a local freedom school in your area.
Interesting. So the Freedom School was born during 1964 Freedom Summer in Mississippi, and this was obviously at the height of the civil rights movement. What's the relevance of the Freedom School in this current age of Black Lives Matter, George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and everything that's just happening right now?
You know, it's so relevant, and it's so timely. I mean, one of my goals as the new national director is to increase our bandwidth in terms of offering Freedom Schools in more communities around the country. And I think Dr. Wilson is definitely the right person to lead us in that direction, primarily because he's had so much work with the Ferguson Commission and Black Lives Matter because of the 2014 shooting of Michael Brown. And so it just shows us how important it is to have high quality enrichment, particularly in the summer, for children who are living in either, you know, high crime, you know, high poverty neighborhoods that need an outlet, right? That need the opportunity. I mean, within our integrated reading curriculum, we read text about Emmett Till. Right. And for those of you who don't know, Emmett Till was, you know, the young boy who was lynched in Money, Mississippi. And his mother, you know, made headlines because she showed the world what they did to her son, because he was named as whistling at a white woman. Right. And so kind of this young Black boy stepping out of his place at that particular time in our history. And we see, unfortunately, we see the same type of lynching of our young people just in new ways. And so to have a full circle moment, to use history to teach our children that we can indeed transcend the injustice is what Freedom School can do. We can use history, we can use culturally responsive reading, and we can use a commitment to social action to show children that there is a better way, and that there we can and must make a difference in our lives and in our communities. But it's very relevant, and now more than ever, honestly.
And that's our show for the week. Special thanks to today's guest, Dr. Crystal Moore Clemens. And thank you, the listening audience. If you like what you heard, please check out future episodes. A special shout out, as always, to Uncle Phil and Aunt Viv. Have a blessed day.